Welcome to Disinformation Wars, a project of the American Foreign Policy Council. I'm AFPC Senior Vice President Ilan Berman. Disinformation Wars is a series of conversations with officials, experts, and practitioners designed to take you behind the scenes of the struggle for hearts and minds of global publics that's now taking place around the world. It's a contest being waged by Russia, China, Iran, and other actors, and the stakes could not be any higher.
On April 7th, a gunman opened fire in a crowded cafe on Dizengoff Street, one of Tel Aviv's busiest and most vibrant thoroughfares. The shooting attack killed three civilians and wounded several others, and touched off a manhunt that stretched throughout Israel's second city. On one level, it was an incident that, tragically, has become all too familiar in Israel, where radicals and extremists have long sought to disrupt the normal functioning of society. On another, however, it represented part of a new and deeply alarming trend. In the aftermath of the Dizengoff attack, researchers uncovered clear digital footprints that the attack had been instigated and encouraged by disinformation and media manipulation emanating from the Islamic Republic of Iran. And this was hardly the only incident. Earlier this year, a suspected Iranian disinformation network launched a targeted Facebook campaign directed at nationalist and ultra-religious Jews in Israel. The unit posed as an extreme ultra-Orthodox Jewish news group, posting news of an imminent religious war and inciting violence against Palestinians. It also posted invitations to far-right anti-government protests and promoted anti-police sentiment. Social media companies have scrambled to keep up with the Iranian offensive. But as the Dizengoff tragedy shows, it is having real-world effects, both in Israel and abroad. What those are and how we can best respond was the subject of my recent chat with Moshe Kwiat. Moshe is an open-source intelligence analyst specializing in disinformation and a graduate researcher at Reichman University. He is a captain in the IDF reserves and has worked on counterterrorism and international relations for Israel's Ministry of Public Security and the Israeli Ministry of Defense. His research and writing have appeared in such publications as the Israel Journal of Foreign Affairs, the Times of Israel, and the Jerusalem Post. Moshe, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I want to begin with the April 7th terrorist attack. In its aftermath, you noted on Twitter that a number of social media accounts were trying to promote the attack's objective of sowing terror, discord, and distrust, and doing so in the Hebrew language. Can you explain this phenomenon?
So as you mentioned, on April 7th, there was a horrible terrorist attack in downtown Tel Aviv, really in the middle of Tel Aviv. It took the lives of Tomer Morad, Eitam Magini, and Barak Rufan. And at the time, there was complete chaos in the streets of Tel Aviv, and rumors were swirling around on WhatsApp, on social media, and even on TV and radio. And I was just sitting on my computer following the chaos, and I noticed some suspicious accounts which were amplifying particular reports and particular narratives only. For instance, that there was a hostage situation, that the terrorists went on a rampage and took control of an entire apartment building in the area, inflating the number of casualties, claiming that they had proof that it was an Arab-Israeli who carried out the attack, and more narratives like this, really narratives that were focused on trying to heighten the feeling of terror even more and heighten the feeling of chaos. And these were accounts which I had noticed in the past and put them aside in my head. And then I saw them active during the aftermath of the attack.
The messaging you mentioned surrounding the Dizengoff attack was part of a broader campaign on the part of the Iranians, actually. Talk about that larger campaign a little bit. What are its main features? Who are its main actors? And what's the strategic objective here?
I'll start from the last question there. Let's first talk about the main objectives, right? Like, as you mentioned, the Iranians have been waging kind of an ongoing influence operation against Israel. The main objectives really have been broadening existing chasms in Israeli society and undermining the current government, whoever it may be, you know, whether it's the current government under Prime Minister Bennett or under the previous government headed by Benjamin Netanyahu. There's also been a little bit of promoting pro-Iranian narratives and perhaps also boosting anti-Israel morale in the Arab world. I'll touch on that one in a second. It's actually a really fascinating case. So where do we see these campaigns being played out? We see them really being played out mainly on Facebook, a little bit on Telegram and Twitter as well. And it takes all different shapes, really. On one hand, we've seen Iran establish fake news platforms where essentially you'll see a new alternative news outlet with some name that sounds Israeli or whatever, but no, it's actually completely Iranian run. then there's also the use of real news platforms, even like the Tasnim agency, which is an official Iranian media. They came out with a Hebrew version of their website recently. So you can think of that kind of as a parallel to Russia Today. Then there's also been mass campaigns on Twitter, like hashtag campaigns, which are clearly pro-Iranian. They're not hiding it, but are also focused on spreading these narratives, undermining Israeli society, undermining the current government, et cetera. And then also, I think it's worth mentioning that they've also been using, I would say this is kind of focusing on quality and less on quantity, where they've had a small number of profiles, which they really invest in and invest energy in to develop relationships with civil society and members of social protest movements and things of that nature. And the same sort of infrastructure can be used also to carry out espionage, which they've done as well. And actually the Shabak, the Israeli Internal Security Agency, has recently published two cases so far of such things happening. Now also you had mentioned main actors. So the main actors really have been your usual suspects. You've got the Ministry of Intelligence, the Iranian Ministry of Intelligence, and Quds Force, part of the IRGC. In addition, it's more difficult to attribute it, but it looks like that Hezbollah and Hamas have also been involved. We do know that Hezbollah, for instance, has disinformation training camps focused more on Iraq or the Arab world. It's been documented that Hamas uses disinformation against the Palestinian Authority. There's also been hints at either Hamas or Hezbollah targeting Israel as well. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier about trying to spread anti-Israel sentiment in the Arab world. During Guardian of the Walls operation, basically a year ago today, Hamas was pounding Israel with rockets. There was civil unrest in Israeli cities, especially mixed cities, which have both the Jewish and Arab residents. And there was a campaign on Twitter where these fictitious Israeli profiles were talking about how they were completely distressed and that they'd given up all hope. And the only solution was to escape Israel, was to run away. And it was pretty laughable. Israelis who came across this, a lot of the replies were just completely ridiculous. But actually, it turns out that screenshots of this campaign were taken and then spread in by influencers in the Arab world saying, you know, or look how Hamas is really hurting Israel here. And then right after the Garden of the Walls campaign ended, Hezbollah actually put out a video in English explaining to Israelis how to emigrate from Israel and go back to Europe and the United States. So the same narrative, and that's why I think that maybe it was tied into Hezbollah or Hamas. So anyway, so that really gives you kind of a broad overview of the sort of campaigns being carried out by Iran against Israel.
Right. And it's not an isolated phenomenon. There's a lot of commonality here and synergy between the online activities of Iran and those of other nefarious actors like Russia and China. How is this cooperation taking place? What are we seeing in the online domain?
So that's actually a very interesting question. I think it's really one of the phenomenons that really has piqued my interest, because you'll see kind of how the interests of these different actors coalesce. And this cooperation takes place, for instance, this cooperation between Russia and China in the sphere as well. Saw that a lot during COVID and disinformation about COVID, about the vaccine. And where does Iran fit into this? How do they play into it here? So first of all, they actually, a lot of times, they'll parrot the narratives being spread by Russian and Chinese disinformation agents, whether it be Russia Today or outlets of that nature. And really talking about the same narratives. And this is also apparent during the war in Syria. It's been apparent in discourse about pandemic and vaccines. And also in the 2020 elections in the United States is also interesting. Not just Iran was parroting Russia Today, but I've also found Hezbollah media, official Hezbollah media, copy-pasting RT articles. So there definitely is a lot of overlap. And we see this on social media as well, by the way, in the context of Ukraine. So first of all, Jason Brodsky and David Daoud They recently published an article in Haaretz about this in the context of the war in Ukraine, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but also something that I noticed as well, that the main account, which was active in the aftermath of the Dizengoff attack, you know, looking over some of its both recent and looking farther back, it was parroting narratives being pushed by Syrian influence actors and also Russian influence actors. So you see kind of this convergence between the interests of Russia, Syria, Iran, Hezbollah. Of course, that's no news for anybody who follows the Middle East, right? Look what's happening in Syria. But it is very interesting how you see that all combined. And then also you throw in China in the mix as well. And it can really be a danger for society, whether it be Israel, whether it be NATO countries, whether it be the United States. At the end of the day, it's a problem that really hits all of us. And maybe because Hebrew is not as widely spoken as English, Israel isn't targeted as much or doesn't get as much attention as operations in Europe or in the United States, but it's really a danger for everyone.
Okay, so how is the government of Israel and Israeli society writ large responding to all this? Is Israel aware of the scope of the problem that you just laid out? And is it taking steps to mitigate it?
So that's an interesting question, one that's difficult to answer in Israel. It's no secret that Israel engages in psychological warfare and things of that nature. But in terms of defending ourselves, the normal citizen like myself has no idea. I firmly believe that the Israeli security agencies, whether it be military intelligence, Shabak, Mossad, they're definitely aware of what's going on. But you know, one of the properties of Israeli society is that that security sector is highly militarized, meaning many functions which in the US may be part of a civilian intelligence agency here are probably handled by the military. And also there's a lot stricter classification, and you know, there's even a military censor. So we don't really know the full picture of what's going on. Like I said, I'm sure Israel is aware and active. And you know, there have been press releases about, let's say, that the espionage that was taking place by Facebook, by Iran. However, there definitely leaves room to be desired. And one aspect which I think is kind of central, and we're seeing this countries in Europe implementing this, is education of the public. And you need to balance combating or informing of the threat versus not overinflating it. And this is a problem in every single society. But in Israel, there's almost no informing of the threat going on. My personal opinion is that this would be something best handled by a civilian agency like the Israeli National Cyber Directorate, or maybe the National Public Diplomacy Directorate. And of course, maybe they already are working together on this, but more transparency is definitely needed. Civil society does engage with this issue a little bit. But the organizations which are taking part in discussing this, a lot of these organizations, the main organizations, are highly partisan in nature, which hurts their reliability. And thus, many are skeptical of these organizations. So if you're not going to trust them when, let's say, they're talking about domestic disinformation, then maybe you're not going to trust them when they talk about foreign disinformation as well. So Israel's definitely in a tough spot. And I think there's definitely more that needs to be done. And my hope is that the government and the security agencies will continue to tackle this problem and also share the public a bit in what's going on.
So to that point, the geopolitical context here is crucial, I think. It's simply not possible to understand Iran's investments in disinformation and propaganda that's targeting Israel without understanding the larger strategic rivalry between the two countries. Is what we're seeing, is what you're talking about, that Iran has embraced the use of disinformation as a soft power approach against the country they call the Little Satan?
I think so. I mean, I think it's part of their overall approach of kind of poking Israel in the eye a bit without getting any blowback. At the end of the day, they want to hurt Israel as much as they can, but a full-on military conflict is probably not what they envision right now. Probably not what they want right now. So they just try and hurt Israel as much as they can, right? And if we look at disinformation and a lot of soft power strategies, it's low risk, high reward. The risk is low. You know, you're not going to trigger a war over disinformation. However, I doubt any of these campaigns have really been successful in their overall strategic goals. or if they have, not to a far extent. There definitely have been cases where we actually have seen impact on the ground. But at the end of the day, it definitely has the potential to really escalate to something big. Israel right now is a highly fractured society. And if they take advantage of that, and if they're able to push someone to go the extra step and, let's say, turn things violent, right? I mean, recently it hit the news that a 65-year-old woman was arrested for sending death threats to the prime minister, which included bullets in envelopes. So what if it was an Iranian disinformation actor that kind of pushed her to do that, whether it be in a one-on-one conversation or whether it be as a broader campaign? Taking advantage of these things is definitely something that's within Iran's interests and definitely is part of their strategy. They have Hezbollah to the north, they've got Hamas to the south, and they've got this as well. And never mind the diplomacy which Iran attempts to use against Israel. This definitely is part of a broader picture, and that definitely can't be lost. And we're talking about the threat of Iran and the competition between Iran and Israel. I think that this is central in understanding the larger picture. This definitely is a key aspect, I think, of the strategic competition between these two countries, which may not be the same level of strategic competition between the U.S. and China. But as somebody sitting in Israel, it's definitely something that is that's always on my mind and, of course, is on the mind of many Israelis.
Wonderful. Moshe, thank you so much for taking the time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Disinformation Wars. To learn more about the American Foreign Policy Council and our work on public diplomacy, visit us online at www.afpc.org. And, as always, we hope you'll join us again next time.